choosing to build a better America. An America that's confronting the climate crisis, with America's workers leading the way. And we're rebuilding an economy, a clean energy economy, and we're doing it from the bottom up and the middle out. I'm so tired of trickle down, I can't stand it.
That, of course, was President Joe Biden speaking at the Detroit Auto Show's Media Day yesterday. Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Have you noticed that the auto show is back? All the people who are here in downtown Detroit, milling around, people from all over the world, in fact, who visit during the opening week of auto show before it opens to the public. Have you thought about maybe going to the auto show when it does open to the public Saturday morning? We want to talk today about the auto show, its history, and its return this year. Detroit's first auto show, of course, occurred in 1899 when two electric and two steam-powered cars were exhibited by the city's only auto dealer at the time. Soon enough, of course, Detroit Auto Show became an annual tradition known half a century later as the biggest auto show of all, as it was dubbed in 1961. It attracted 1.4 million people to the recently completed Cobo Hall, which we now call Huntington Place. In this way, you know, the auto show represents not only our annual homage to the car, but also an homage to ourselves as the city that put the country and really the world on wheels. So now the auto show is back after taking a break during the pandemic. But this year's festivities are going to look really different from what you're used to. For the first time in the show's history, there are both indoor and outdoor events, which expands the show's footprint. Of course, we're doing this in September and not the dead cold of January, which makes things feel different for auto show. But how will this all change the effect that the show has on how we remember it? And what can we expect from this year's event? That is where we want to begin the conversation today. And to answer some of those questions and more, I am joined by Thad Zott, who is the president of the Detroit Auto Dealers Association and co-chair of the Detroit Auto Show. Thad, thanks for joining us here on Detroit Today.
My pleasure. Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Yeah. So before we talk about this year's show, I want to tell you two stories about Auto Show. I, of course, grew up here in Detroit in the 1970s and 80s and have very vivid Auto Show memories. One is in 1986 when my mother actually went to the show, and my memory is that she bought a car. She bought an Astro van, a Chevy Astro van that she saw while she was at the show. She was blown away by it. She's like, I gotta have that. And my memory is that she was able to buy the car there. Maybe she just kind of worked out the deal there and then went to a dealer, but that was something that stood out to me. But the other thing I can remember really vividly, I was in the marching band in high school, and every year, one of the biggest performances we ever had was going to the auto show and marching the red carpet around Cobo Hall. So those are two things that you wouldn't see a whole lot of today, but of course, the auto show is still with us.
Well, I love the stories, and that's a special year to me, 1986, because that's when I got my first car at 16 years old, a Jeep CJ7. So that was a great year. And I love that story about your mom buying a car. It's funny, we had that conversation. I was speaking with Rod Alberts, the executive director of the show, this week, just about what can we do next year to improve and make some changes, and maybe we'll get a band in here too. I kind of like that idea. But but we started talking about how can people maybe get a little closer to purchasing if they want. Can we set up electronically somehow to feed this information to the dealers? And at the time we had the conversation, we were just a little too close to the show, but we were really strongly having that conversation about 23 show.
Yeah, so you might bring back the idea of buying a car at the auto show.
Yeah, I mean, I think with, you know, the way the world works and online opportunities, we can somehow pull it off. Now, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of details that goes into that. You know, can we actually can we actually do the paperwork and all that? Probably not. But I think we can land on a car, you know, find it in someone's inventory here around Metro Detroit and line them up with the correct dealer and put them in contact to wrap it up. But it's something that we were looking at. And I'm excited to see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's talk about this year's show. As I said, we haven't had an auto show in a couple of years because of the pandemic. But even before the pandemic, we were talking about how the show was going to be different. We were planning for something other than what we had been doing for decades here in Detroit. So tell me what to expect when I show up at the show. I'm actually going to go to the charity preview tomorrow night. That's usually my first look at it. What's going to be different? What am I going to notice that that's going to surprise me at this year's show?
Well, I think, first of all, we've been gone over 3.5 years, if you can believe that. January of 19 was the last show in Detroit. So it's been a long time. But changes are really going on prior to that, and we knew that. We started to analyze what we need to do differently back then. And certainly the pandemic really, really shook things up. So we had to basically reimagine the entire show. I think there's no secret that there's a lot of, you know, car shows around the world that are struggling or even gone, some of the biggest in the world. And we knew that we had to change things and embrace what's going on. You know, manufacturers are going to market differently. People are buying goods and services online differently. And we recognize all that. So to answer your specific question, you know, there's three major things I think that we can really highlight of what the show is really, why is it so different this year? Number one, you talked about, right, the move from January to September is massive. I mean, we've had reveals out at Hart Plaza already with Ford Mustang, and we walked from, you know, Huntington Place down to Hart Plaza. It was 80 degrees. It was sunny. There were 400 Mustangs parked in front of Hart Plaza that went on a tour across the country to get here when they revealed the Mustang. They were all parked out in front on Jefferson. And the vibe and the electricity in the city was just, it was awesome.
Wow.
And to make that walk down to Hart Plaza with the riverfront, the boats going by, and, you know, the skyline of Detroit, no one ever got to really enjoy that in January. So the first thing you're going to feel is like you can actually park, you know, half a mile away and enjoy the walk to Huntington Place and maybe even stop at a few places, you know, in Hart Plaza on the way. So that's a huge change. We talked a lot about the months, which month is the right month. You know, a lot of people had input in that, and I think we made the right decision on September.
Yeah.
So, that's number one. You know, number two, I think, is these activations and engagements. And people always are asking me, what do you mean by, you know, activations and engagements? And you know, do we get to go behind the wheel and sit behind and look at the new technology? Well, certainly, but the bigger point is that we have 5 active tracks inside Huntington Place. And certainly change of the format of indoor and outdoor, which is really point number 3, has allowed us to do that. So, you know, when you walk into Huntington Place, it's not going to be your same routine that you've had, you know, for over the last 30 years of what you do. It's different. I mean, there's tracks to get engaged in and then try out this new technology of climbing these Bronco Mountains and these camp Jeeps and Ram's obstacle course and take the Ford Lightning from 0 to 60 right inside Huntington Place. So you're going to get behind the wheel, and that's the big change. Number 2. And like I said, the indoor outdoor is number 3.
Yeah. So for years I was told that we were having the auto show in January because that coincided with scheduling that the industry had for type reveals, you know, model reveals and technology reveals and things like that, and that we couldn't move it to the warmer months because there were other shows that were scheduled in those slots. But talk about why September works from an industry standpoint and from the standpoint of keeping this show, you know, on top, right? In terms of interest from people all over the world. Why are we now able to do this?
Well, listen, I think the important part here is, like, you know, we help arrange the stage, right? And Huntington Place is the stage, but the stars of this whole thing are the manufacturers and their cars. And they had a tremendous amount of input on what month we moved to. We were looking really hard at June. And really the manufacturers kind of tipped the scale over to put it in September, because if you think about how, you know, the model year works in our world, I'm actually a car dealer, so that's what I do day to day. I'm really a car salesman, but this is my side job. You know, we're clearing everything out from the previous model year, and we're launching the new, you know, 2023 models right now. And so September is that month. We clear out the old and bring in the new. So for the manufacturers, they were really excited about, hey, let's look at September. The days of, you know, we're bringing everything to market in January are gone. And September is really the perfect month because we're introducing all the new models. And they want to have them at the show. So, you know, we listen to them closely. And they, their other input was that they really, really wanted to get people behind the wheel. And so, you know, I would mention some track activations inside Huntington Place, but like General Motors and Volkswagen, maybe one more manufacturer, we're still buttoning some things up, are going to actually be doing test drives and some of the new technology with electrification right out the backside of Huntington Place on the riverfront there. You'll be able to take the cars out on the Jefferson. And the cool part about that whole thing is you're actually going to be driving for the most part on the 2023 Grand Prix course, which is moving from Belle Isle, where it has been, to actually downtown streets next year. So a lot of very, very energetic, exciting things happening. Like I said, it's a whole new vibe.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Thad Zott. He's a Detroit Auto Show co-chair and president of the Detroit Auto Dealers Association. We're talking about the return of the North American International Auto Show. Detroit Auto Show returns next week to the public here in Detroit. Of course, this week is all the industry days, and the media day was yesterday. President Joe Biden came to town to talk about his enthusiasm for the auto industry. We want to talk to you during this conversation as well, hear from you about how excited you are about the return of the auto show. First time since 2019 that we're actually having it. Do you have memories like I do of going to the auto show as a kid? What do you remember was different then than is now? And what do you think of all the changes that they're unveiling this year? It's not only in a different month, but the show itself is going to be really different than what you're used to. Are you looking forward to that? Are you planning to go take your family? Are you going to the charity preview, which is going to be held again tomorrow night at Huntington Place? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Let's start today with Frank in Livonia. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Stephen. Welcome back. I remember when I was 1963, I was about 8 years old, and we went to the auto show with my dad, who worked for Chrysler all of his life. And I remember this Mercury Monterey that had a the window was slanted the opposite direction, you know, so and it opened up in the back, and we were just like, oh, that's so cool. My dad like hustled us away, like, and you know, and I could start to get the sense of the tribalism of the, you know, back in those days, of, you know, if you're Ford or Chrysler. I bought a 74 Monte Carlo. This was a sweet car. And, you know, I brought it home to Dad. This was like 78 when I bought it used. He would not let me. Don't park that in the driveway. He didn't even want to, you know, he wouldn't go out and look at it or anything. But, you know, I got the sense, I just, and you know, the other thing, as I was waiting to come on the air, I remember that, and I don't know if it was at this particular auto show, but being fascinated with the man that had a little dustpan and a small broom. And, you know, the pan would drop down flat. He'd sweep up little bits and pieces. Well, of course, he was black. Huh. And I started getting a sense then, because my brother and I, we're like, oh, that's so cool. And we were kind of, and he was really nice. And I just recall that so vividly, how nice this gentleman was to us. And then my dad, like, come on, let's get out. You know, he, you know, but I, and then all, and it, from that point on, it got me thinking about this tribalism between, even for black and white people.
That's interesting, Frank.
I guess, Frank, what do you think? Is that still going on?
So, I mean, that's an interesting question, Thad, and you would know because, as you said, you know, you're a dealer here in Detroit. Is there a different culture, I guess, among the Detroit automakers, especially after the bankruptcies, which, you know, put two of the automakers in real jeopardy and really had the third on the ropes as well. Is there more cooperation and a sense of them kind of being linked and their fortunes being linked? Or is there still this kind of, you know, cutthroat, look, I'm a GM person, I'm a GM family. I grew up in a GM family here, and you could not buy another car in our family and park it at my grandfather's house, that was for sure. That's different today, I think, and I guess that does raise the question about whether the competition between the three is quite the same.
Well, I think the competition level is extremely high still. I mean, I think that spirit is still alive from manufacturer to manufacturer. And I think that the slightly older generation, maybe those over 50 like myself, still feel that a little stronger. And I think as you get younger, I think it's starting to get watered down a bit. You know, we have multiple brands, which a lot of dealers didn't do that back in the day. You know, we have Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, and then we have Ford and Toyota. And so, you know, we get to interact with all the different manufacturers, and so we got a pretty good sense of it. But the competitive spirit is extremely high, I got to tell you, from manufacturer to manufacturer. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. But I think that the younger generation, on some of the conversations with, you know, don't you dare park your Chevy in this Ford family's driveway, is getting a little more acceptable, and a little more watered down with the younger ages.
Yeah, they don't have much of a frame of reference for all of that stuff.
It's still there. I mean, I hear it on a showroom. I'm really connected with people, and I'm out on a showroom an awful lot, so I'm pretty close to that vibe. It's definitely still there, but not near as strong as it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Frank, appreciate the call and your memories of the show. Let's go next to Michael in Detroit. Michael, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Stephen. I was good to listen in. I'm concerned about the show staying in Detroit. I have memories of going to it in absolutely frigid temperatures, and the rationale to moving it to September for the model year to coincide with the model year, that makes a lot of sense. But that's been like that forever. That's not something that's recently changed with the makers. Mm-hmm. And some of the intel that I'm hearing from insiders is they want to move the show to Las Vegas. And I want to know what, or find out if there's anything that's happening to keep that show in Detroit. Because the last time we had it, a couple of the world's largest automakers didn't participate.
Hmm. So, Michael, you're hearing that they would move the Detroit show to Vegas. It's an interesting. I have not heard that. We've always worried about the show and its future and its stability. There are other auto shows. I mean, Vegas has a show and also has a technology show that has become heavily about autos and the things, you know, our cars are now essentially rolling computers. Is the show, I guess, under threat the way Michael is hearing?
Absolutely not. And I don't know if everybody knows this, but the Detroit Auto Show is actually owned by the Detroit Auto Dealers.
Right. How could it go somewhere else?
Right. I mean, I think that's a lot of things that people don't know, which I think actually gives us a competitive advantage because, you know, some of these manufacturers that may be shying away from car shows, and I think when they get a vibe of what we've come up with this year, we're going to have more and more back even next year. But we actually pulled off a whole bunch of extra manufacturers here for people to, you know, competitively shop that wouldn't have been here if we didn't have the dealers owning the show, because we actually got a bunch of dealers to bring in a bunch of inventory, which is extremely hard to get. Mm-hmm. Some manufacturers chose not to come because they just didn't have any cars. There's no cars.
Yeah.
Everything's pre-sold. So luckily, we leaned on our dealer network to get up to, I think we're getting pretty close to 30 brands here, which in today's world is almost a miracle to pull
off.
That's a lot. And that's because of our dealer network.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Michael, appreciate the call. Let's go to Ann in Detroit. Ann, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
I just wanted to share that my dad's business was Gale and Rice Talent.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, they introduced female models to be giving information on the cars. And, you know, wonder why.
I remember that.
But the fun thing is, after that, our family, there are five girls in my family, And my dad actually had our Christmas card picture with us in the hot pink mini dresses they wore. Now, needless to say, we didn't look like the models, but it was, you know, it's a fun memory. And, you know, they were the ones who made it big for women to promote the cars.
And really appreciate the call and those memories, Thad. You know, the changes this year do remind me of how much the show has changed just over my lifetime. As I was saying, you know, in the 1980s, my mom went and bought a car there, and the show was really different. I mean, I'm excited about the things that we're going to experience this year, because I think it's just another step in the evolution of this event. It has always changed.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, our industry overall is in a major, major transformation right now. I think everybody would agree with that, right? From gas motors to hybrid to electrification,
sure.
All the new technologies are coming out. The way that people buy goods and services, certainly with vehicles and the trade-in values, is a lot of it's taking place online. We recognize all that. So, you know, we're in the middle of that whole transition too, and we just embrace the change. And we're certainly excited about, I think this is such a, if you have families out there going, you know, I have a younger kids and I don't know if I want to take them to the show. I got to tell you, the engagements we set up for families for this show are unbelievable. The kids are going to have, if not more fun than the adults, I think it's going to be right on par with the adults. And certainly adults get all excited to see all the new technology, all the new cars. But we have a lot of family activations. You know, we have a whole dinosaur exhibit. We have a 61-foot duck out in front of Huntington Place that's 6 stories high. I could go on and on about some of the other family activities, but I think if you're questioning it, you're really doing yourself a disservice if you don't give it a shot. It's completely different. Nothing like you've ever experienced before. It's walkable. You can run out and go grab a bite to eat, maybe come back. And I think the kids are just going to absolutely love some of the activities we set up for them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Thad Zott, co-chair of the auto show and president of the Detroit Auto Dealers Association. Really great to have you here to talk about the show. And we'll see you at Huntington Place in the next week.
Steven, thank you for having me. And I look forward to maybe grabbing you at Charity Preview and saying hi.
Absolutely.
All right. Sir, have a great day.
Yeah. When we come back, we are going to continue talking about cars and the automotive industry. We'll take a look at how the automotive world is changing, how it's impacting our economy, and what the transition to electric vehicles is looking like. Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast, is going to join us next. We want to continue to hear from you as well. Call and tell us what you think, not just of the auto show, but of the industry that defines our city. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. In Detroit and Michigan, we, of course, live and die by the strength of the auto industry. Many people have been really critical of this relationship, but you can't deny that it's true. Even if you don't work for the auto industry, your job in Michigan is probably tied in some way to the health of the auto industry. And that means it is really important to all of us. We often track how well the big three are doing because it matters in all of our lives. It's correlated with the funding of public and private things that make our lives possible and in many cases make our lives better. The reopening of the auto show to in-person events allows us to have a far-reaching conversation about that relationship to this industry that has defined Detroit for more than a century. And it's a good time to do so, as there are a lot of big questions about that industry and its future. With the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, for instance, how quickly can Michigan switch to a majority electric vehicle market? How long before charging stations replace gas stations? What about the infrastructure for autonomous vehicles? Are we even beginning to think about all of the things that we need to do to make that possible? And how will all of these differences change the rest of our built environment? Are there significant ways that automotive companies will try to innovate and enter non-automotive markets to make things better and more accommodating to their products? There are so many questions swirling around the auto industry right now. And to help us sort through them, we've got Jamie Butters here with us. He is the executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. Jamie, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hi, Stephen. Good to hear you.
Yeah, good to have you here. So let's start with this. You, like the rest of us, have missed out on Auto Show for the last 3 years. In a recent piece, you noted that this is not your grandfather's auto show. I thought it was a really interesting look at all of the things that are different. Talk about those differences and what the strategic difference is in the way that this show is put together. There was a lot of thought put into this.
Yeah. You know, it's like, and I talked with Thad, as you just had, who you just had on the show, and mm-hmm. It's really clear the show is entering really a third era, right? We had the original Cars on Carpets, Detroit Auto Show, kind of like a lot of other shows, but a little more juiced because it was in Detroit, the Motor City.
Mm-hmm.
1989, it changed. It became the North American International Auto Show. You know, Toyota came to Detroit to introduce Lexus. Nissan came to launch Infiniti. It really put the show on the map as a global, confab, as a place where everybody who was anybody in the industry would want to get to and be able to see each other's work and see each other in person, a whole, sort of global community that really built up around shows, Detroit especially, but other major shows around the world, Frankfurt and Paris, New York, L.A., Tokyo, Geneva, later Beijing and Shanghai. And then in the more recent years, about the last half decade or so, automakers have really started rethinking the value of participating in those shows, the cost that goes into them, and the value they get back out of them. I think a lot of the modern marketing metrics count against it, in part because they don't really include the value of those other connective tissues mm-hmm. that these shows provide to the industry, to the global automotive community. But they were really expensive, and if you do them separately, I mean, we saw just last week, right, GM unveiled the electric Equinox. They did it on a morning TV show.
Yeah.
Because it was cheaper and they could reach more people. So it's kind of the way cars get introduced has changed, the way these shows run. So now we're seeing, just like here in Detroit, this pivot back toward regional shows, trying to really get people excited about vehicles in their local market, especially when they're put on by a dealer association, trying to get people excited. What's out there? What is the new technology? How do we learn about it? Try to get people familiarized. And that's the new era. You know, that old era that I grew up covering is pretty much gone. CES in Las Vegas, the former Consumer Electronics Show,
yeah.
is kind of the biggest international automotive show left.
Yeah. You know, I was talking about that with Thad, that you've got these other shows out there now, including CES, which is at least nominally about technology and innovation, but has become heavy auto because the cars that we drive are so dependent now on technology. I wonder, though, if we had a caller who wondered about the stability of this show and the future of it. Is there a need to even do this, even in Detroit, where the auto, the domestic auto industry is still headquartered?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, need is an interesting element. A lot of vehicle purchases, right, are not really driven by need.
Right.
A lot of them, especially new cars, are sold for want, for people expressing themselves and trying to reach some sort of consumer fulfillment. But there's a bigger need for education around EVs, around charging, maybe even hydrogen. Is that if that ever becomes a bigger part of the market. There's so much technology changing. I feel like there's a huge need for people, for there to be an education component. And it clearly works for dealers. I mean, do we need it right now? Because when there's very little inventory, Honda, you know, has basically stopped going to shows, even with their local dealer groups, because they don't have inventory on the lots. they don't want to, you know, get people excited to go to the Honda store when they can't sell them anything. They barely can make enough vehicles to sell to their returning customers. So there's a little bit of a question in the short term, but, you know, it's going to be a competitive market. And, you know, whether even in a place like Detroit, where a lot of people have family ties to one brand or another, one company or another, people still like to see each other's cars. I think they'll get good attendance, you know, maybe not record setting. We'll see what it's like in September against football season and a full school schedule.
Sure.
But, you know, we'll see if enough people show up. It could be, you know, very, very fruitful. They're just trying to do, as Fed, I'm sure, told you, they're trying to make a lot of fun things to make it exciting for people to just hang out and be in Detroit and celebrate, you know, this industry that means so much to our community. Sort of like, you know, like the Woodward Dream Cruise does, looking backward. Maybe the Detroit Auto Show tries to do looking forward.
So you've been at the show, of course, this week, and tell us about these new features, these things you can actually go do, some of them inside, some of them outside at the show.
I haven't experienced all of them yet, but, you know, they've got some really pretty elaborate drive events indoors for the Bronco and Jeep. I don't know, is they call it Jeep Mountain, or is it Bronco Mountain and Camp Jeep, I think, are the names. But, you know, really steep climbs. They get very high. They descend at really sharp angles that would make a normal person uncomfortable. My podcast colleague, Kellen Walker, went on the Camp Jeep ride yesterday, and he said the down, you know, you go up at a 40-degree angle, and he said coming down, if you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're going to be smashed against the dash.
Wow.
Because you're just hanging there. So, you know, very impressive, you know, really, you know,
it's like an amusement park ride or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like a roller coaster, but of course the human is driving it and keeping it on the track. So that's always a little exciting. There's, you know, a lot of us have been taking photos, with the giant ducky down by the river. Did you guys talk about that already with Thad?
No.
It's a part of a Jeep culture thing. There's the Jeep wave. Whenever people ride driving Jeeps, see each other, they give a little wave, especially if they're in a Wrangler. Yeah. And now they've got these ducks, and you get these ducks, and then if you see somebody's Jeep and you think it's cool, you leave it for them, and it's sort of a little Jeep game. And then to celebrate that, they brought in the world's largest inflatable duck and put it down by the river. I thought it was going to be in the river. I was a little sad about that, but it's right there by, right out in front of Huntington Place, and, you know, you can't miss it, and it does, you know, in a selfie culture, it is a great little icon a great big icon to take a picture with.
I'm talking with Jamie Butters. He is the executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. We're talking about Auto Show, which is in its industry and media days right now. Charity preview is tomorrow, and then the show will open to the public on Saturday morning at Huntington Place, formerly Cobo Hall. It is the first time in 3 years that we've had Auto Show in person on this kind of scale. But, of course, it is something that we've had for decades, more than a century, in fact, here in Detroit. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. What do you make of the Auto Show? What do you make of the changes that the automotive industry is undergoing right now? All of the focus on EV and hybrid cars that are coming onto the market. What do you make of the government policy shifts that are encouraging electric vehicles and things that are not reliant on fossil fuels? Also, give us a sense if you think this is all a great time, really, for the automotive industry, that all of these changes, all of this new technology and the things that cars are capable of doing or right on the cusp of being capable of doing is a great thing for for the auto industry, which, of course, we really, really still depend on here in Detroit. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue with Jamie Butters, and we will get to your calls. Stay with us for more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad you've joined us. Our guest right now is Jamie Butters. He's executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. We're talking about the return of Auto Show here in Detroit, underway right now in industry and media days, and then open to the public this weekend. I want to hear from you about your excitement about Auto Show and its return, but also about the industry that defines us here in Detroit and all of the changes that it is undergoing. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Jamie, before we get to listeners, I want to talk to you about two things. One is this shift to electric, which is not new. Every few months, it seems it's more intensified, though, by either a policy change at the government level or by an announcement by a manufacturer who says, hey, we're going to take this even further than we did before. But the other thing I want to talk about, and I think it's related, is the cost of vehicles, especially new vehicles. I feel like for many, many people, and for most families especially, the cost of a new car is quickly becoming a little out of reach. And maybe that's okay, because there are so many used cars that are available on the market. But it does seem like it's something worth pausing to stop and think about. So first of all, let's talk about electrics, but then let's talk about cost and whether those two things are related.
They're absolutely related, because there's a phenomenon known as supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really, a profound undersupply of all new vehicles, whether they're gas burning or electric right now. So prices are high. The automakers are raising prices, the dealers are raising prices. We have dealers adding on to the price, sometimes not even telling their customers until they show up to pick up the vehicle they've waited 5 months for, and then it's like, oh, well, it's going to cost you an extra $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, and if you don't want to pay it, it's fine. I'll sell it to somebody else for that, And it's, been very rough on the consumer. That said, consumers are kind of flush with cash. COVID, a lot of people saved a lot of money during COVID for one reason or another, but they found they still really needed a car, either to, for a whole variety of reasons. But a big one to me was for a good year and a half there, a lot of people didn't want to be flying. It didn't feel safe to fly, but people got a little stir crazy in their homes. You want to get out and about, you want to go around, the best way is just put your little pod in a car and you can travel pretty safely. And then people, they had a little extra cash, so let's buy a car. And people were buying nicer cars, more expensive, adding on all the features. The few cars the automakers could make, they adjusted to that. They're like, let's add all the features. Let's make everything the top trim. And so prices have been going up all across the board. But underlying that, you are absolutely right. I mean, electric vehicles, they cost more to make, and the automakers want to recoup those costs. They're kind of following Tesla's strategy, which is start with more expensive vehicles to try to cover that extra $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, I think even $20,000 on some of the large vehicles, $20,000 extra cost for the battery, and then until you can improve the technology, gain more scale, bring the cost down, and move down the cost curve, like Tesla went from the Model S and X to the Y and 3, still pretty pricey vehicles, but about half the cost of the previous generation larger vehicles. We're starting to see that move along in the EV market too, with the new Jeeps that they just showed, the Equinox EV is going to, could be a very big deal mm-hmm. in the market, but it just depends, you know, how many can they make, how many can they afford to make, if they're, are they even breaking even on those vehicles? It's still very early in the evolution of EV technology.
Yeah. I also wonder about the hybrid option, which for me as a potential EV customer, and I go back and forth about it all the time and think about, okay, well, I have to do this to make sure that I had a charging station at my house and things like that. I would be much quicker to say, oh, well, I'll buy a car that runs partially on electric and that I can put gas in every once in a while. In fact, in our family, we have one of those cars. Why aren't they focusing more on those, which seem more accessible and are easier to use given the infrastructure delay that we've got with electrification?
That's an excellent question. And you are a very rational person for making the choice that you made. You know, the thing is, hybrid technology provides a lot of fuel savings. I mean, and not all hybrids are the same. You can focus the electric power on more horsepower, mm-hmm. on, you know, greater, you know, 0 to 60 speeds. A lot of them are also, you can focus them more on the fuel economy and trying to, you know, not every hybrid gets the 50 miles per gallon that a Prius does.
Sure.
But they all get much better mileage than they do if they're just run on gas. The technology is affordable. It saves a lot of fuel. It takes a lot of carbon out of the air. But I think there's a bit of a fever, a bit of a Tesla fever in both the markets and in the regulatory world. You know, the investors have pumped up Tesla to be worth more than, you know, Toyota, Ford, GM, and Volkswagen combined, even though they all make, you know, more money. They will all make more money this year than Tesla has made in its entire history,
right?
So it's like, it's kind of, but they're betting on the future, and there's a lot of excitement, right? And so then, you know, investors are all looking for the next Tesla. When automakers announce big, ambitious plans to invest, you know, tens of billions of dollars in electric vehicles without really much promise of a profit return on it,
right?
It's a risky bet, but when they make those announcements, the stock price goes up, and they, you know, they're rewarded for it, and
people get excited.
The investors like it, and regulators love the idea of saying we're going to have zero emission vehicles, you know, by 2030 or 2025, and if we just declare it to be so, it will be so. But the cost is a real challenge, the infrastructure is a challenge, all of that, and you know, Akio Toyota. Has been probably the biggest proponent of saying the best solution for this decade is hybrids until we can figure out solid-state batteries and improve EV technology. But the markets and the regulators are really, really excited for all pure EVs.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Francis on the west side of Detroit. Francis, welcome to the show.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So, I guess it's the question is, in the long run, will it be the most environmentally sound thing? I want to breathe clean air as much as anybody, but I was analyzing the Cash for Clunkers program that happened, if you remember it, and it mm-hmm. was sold to us to get old, less fuel-efficient vehicles off the road in order to trade up for a more efficient model, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I don't know if it was so. I mean, I think the best thing that you can do is use something, and this goes for cars as well. It goes for putting patches on the pair of pants I'm wearing right now. I think using something for the longest possible amount of time instead of sending it to the landfill and always replacing it with free thing, you know, new things, I think that's the way to go. I mean, I still drive a 94 Dodge van.
Do you really?
It's maybe doesn't get the most MPG out of anything, but I'm holding on to it until, you know, as long as I can. And until I know that the source of the electricity that we're charging these vehicles with is coming from a clean source, I think I'll keep my old Dodge on the road.
Huh. You know, that's a really interesting perspective, Francis. And I am super impressed that you are driving 94 Dodge that you've somehow managed to keep running for that many years. Jamie, it strikes me that he is the least ideal customer, perhaps, for Detroit automakers. But he's making a good point about apprehension, about whether these things make a difference and whether we really are saving the environment by moving to electric.
Yeah, I mean, Francis makes a really good point in that it's a very complex equation. You know, it's not just how many gallons of gas or how many, you know, lumps of coal, you know, get consumed to propel the vehicle per mile. There's the manufacturing cost. There's the end-of-life cost. And there's a lot of value to, I've done the math, but I mean, there's a lot of value to the environment, of course, in not scrapping vehicles pointlessly.
Mm-hmm.
But they also are somewhat recyclable. But I mean, he draws out, right? And as you said, not everybody in the economy is the same consumer.
Sure.
Some people love to have, you know, insist on having a new car every 2 or 3 years and can afford that. A lot of other people are more frugal and they make their cars last as long as possible. And, you know, that all is part of it. No single consumer is responsible for, you know, fixing or ruining the economy.
Yeah.
and the environment.
Yeah, yeah. Francis, really appreciate the call and the point you're making.
If I could jump in on one more thing,
you know, we
talk a lot of people talk about the statistic, you know, that the average vehicle on the road is 12 years old now, and it gets in people's mindsets, I think, that vehicles last 12 years, but they don't. They last 25 or 30 years if people take care of them. That's, I mean, the 12 years really means, you know, more than half of the vehicles are more than 12 years old. There are a lot of cars from 2000 and even before still on the road, and they'll be kicking around for a while. And even if we went to all EVs tomorrow, it will be decades before we don't have gas cars on the road.
Before people want to get rid of their old gas vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's go next to Harry in Sterling Heights. Harry, welcome to the show. You there, Harry? Oh, Harry hung up. Okay, Jamie, talk to me about design of the cars and how the electrification issue affects those designs. It does seem like we're seeing some cooler designs maybe with the coming along with EV. Is that intentional or is that just a side effect?
Well, I think it kind of cuts both ways. There's sometimes the trend toward such hyper efficiency and streamlined shapes that they can all start to look the same. I think there's a whole wave of, you know, really excellent and interesting crossovers, you know, electric crossovers, the VW ID4, the Mustang Mach-E, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, and so on and so on. And they all kind of look the same. but the idea that overall, designers have a lot more leeway. The new most EVs are on what's called a skateboard platform,
mm-hmm.
and so all the batteries are kind of across there. They make up the floor of the car. It makes it really, you know, rigid. It puts all the center of gravity really low, and then it gives them total freedom above that for how they want to design. It's about safety, comfort, entertainment, as opposed to, you know, designing a traditional, you know, four-cylinder engine vehicle. The engine's going to be up there, and you have to account for that weight. You have to give plenty of room for the human body behind it in case it's in an accident and all that. So there's a lot more freedom for a lot more creative design with EVs, and I do think we'll see more of that over time.
Yeah. Okay, Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. Great to have you here. Maybe I'll see you down at Huntington Place at the show over the next week.
You bet. Thanks, Stephen. Anytime.
Yeah. Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we are going to talk with Congressman Ro Khanna about his new book, Dignity in a Digital Age, and how the Silicon Valley representative believes we can more fairly include blue-collar workers in our changing economy. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.